So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribe. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. Wisconsin Eye is inviting cabinet secretaries for new governor, Democratic Governor Tony Evers, to come and introduce themselves and their agencies and their goals. And I'm so glad that Joe Brennan, Secretary of the Department of Administration, is coming in for an interview. Because, Joe, welcome to Wisconsin Eye.
Thank you.
You have one of the three top jobs in state government. There's the governor, and there's the chief of staff, and the secretary of the Department of All. Is that still, that term came in under Mr. Clouser, but I think it's still valid, isn't it?
Well, one of the people I work with has started to call it the Department of Awesome. So I'm sure there are lots of other things.
Awesome All Administration?
But it is, I think, already just several weeks into the job, I can say that the diversity of the job is one of the things that's one most challenging, but also most appealing, because the natural constituency for the position and for the department is all the rest of the cabinet agencies.
Yes.
and the governor and the legislature. And so it's a very broad reach. It's hopefully a very broad impact that we can have. But making sure, in some ways, how we're going to be able to measure our success as an agency is how well are we able to let the rest of the cabinet agencies do their job, and how well can we maybe articulate what the governor stands for and make sure that process moves forward efficiently and effectively.
Give us a short version of what you had been doing. And you've been a Milwaukee resident for how long?
I've been a Milwaukee resident most of my life. I grew up, born and raised in Wisconsin, lived in Milwaukee most of my life, went to Marquette University, left town after college and went off to work in Washington, D.C. for a little while, worked in state government affairs for Miller Brewing Company, got a graduate degree at the University of Chicago, and then came back to Milwaukee. So I had been gone for 7 or 8 years, mm-hmm. came back and had been back there for almost 20 years now, doing a number of different things in and around public policy. Helped Mayor Barrett get elected in Milwaukee, and then ran his redevelopment authority for about 3 or 4 years there. And then I took a little bit of a departure for the last 11 years. I was the CEO at Discovery World, which is a science and technology center on Milwaukee's lakefront, but doing things there that were still in and around public policy related to STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math, around workforce development, around freshwater and freshwater science. So still in with a hand in public policy, but at a nonprofit institution, and then kind of was called back to do this job. So it's in some ways a return trip to public policy, and I'm enjoying it so far.
Well, I'm struck by the Discovery World budget was what?
About $10 million.
$10 million.
You could put a B on it.
And all funds, biennial budget, is about $75 billion.
Yeah.
Billion.
Yep.
Quite a jump in scale there, my friend.
Yeah. But and no matter what you do, you know, there are always problems to be dealt with. The scale of those problems might be different. One of the things about being at the Department of All, as one of my predecessors, Scott Neitzel,
awesome.
Told me.
Awesome.
Either one. But Scott Neitzel, who was great in the transition, as was Ellen Nowak, and Scott has become a friend because we served on the Wisconsin Center District Board together. But he told me that some of what happens at DOA is the little things, the little problems, they get taken care of inside the agencies. The good news, that goes to the governor. It's the bigger problems that surface up and the ones that you want to make sure that across the enterprise you work on, that's a lot of what happens at DOA. And that's the case in any leadership position, that you know some of the problems are going to be the ones that bubble to the top. And the scale may be a little bit different, but being able to address those and make sure that you're responsive to those and making sure that you're communicative across the enterprise is really one of the jobs of doing it. And it doesn't matter. The dollar numbers don't matter as much as just making sure
all
that you're addressing
all those additional digits
it.
Don't matter.
Yeah. They matter to the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin.
That's true. You've been on the job about 5 weeks. I'm going to ask you about two developments.
Sure.
The Assembly yesterday passed its own tax cut. The Senate is scheduled today to pass mm-hmm. its own. The Evers administration and Democratic legislators have said, why the emergency, mm-hmm. the Joint Finance added an emergency clause, when the governor is going to present his budget in 2 weeks from tomorrow? What's going on in terms of how do you feel?
Well, you know, I think a little bit of that. One, it's a sincere effort to see how can we all be responsive to middle-class Wisconsin.
You both agree.
And the governor has been on that issue, you know, during the campaign and throughout. So this is not something that's new or something that he just outlined since he was elected. This is a proposal that he had throughout his campaign. And so in some ways, I think it's an effort to try to make sure that you're being responsive to that middle class. A little bit of gamesmanship, maybe in the legislature,
a little partisan politics,
a little bit
and then
effort,
going first.
Effort of trying to make sure that you can, you know, do something before they knew that this was coming in the governor's budget. But in some ways, that's less important than how are we actually going to be responsive to that middle class, not just in one action in February of 2019, but how are we going to be responsive throughout the next 4 years, throughout this biennium? And okay. I think that's why the governor is going to lay out priorities that not only is it addressing the middle class through a tax cut, but a whole host of other issues that he's talked about over the 18, 19 months that he was running for office as well.
What strikes me is both the governor and your administration, Democratic legislators, and Republican legislative leaders agree that we need a tax cut. You differ on how to pay for it. You want to limit, your administration wants to limit the manufacturing and ag credit. The Republicans want to draw down the surplus. Why is your position more responsible?
Well, you know, I think the governor has said many times that the use of that one-time money is not sustainable. And what we're trying to do is take a tax credit that overwhelmingly has been most used by millionaires, and people who benefit from that are at a different tax bracket than are the middle class. And so we're trying to make sure we use that resource to make sure we're responsive to the middle class. And it's also the way that the manufacturing and agricultural credit came into being. You know, you may remember this, but
2011.
But other people forget that it was without any public hearing. It costs a lot more
late
and has been far more expansive than was ever imagined. And so, you know, even the way that public policy gets done sometimes is important to what you do and what you're being responsible about.
If the Senate passes it today, then it's not quite on the governor's desk, but it will be soon. Does the governor have to act on it before you present your budget, sir?
I don't know. I don't even know what the timeline is for that.
Okay.
But, I mean, he will, one way or another, whether it's through the budget address or the budget, I mean, we will have to respond in some way, and I expect that the governor will in very short order.
You're one of his top advisors. Do you plan to recommend a veto of the Republican-passed tax cut because you're going to bring your own 1 week, 2 weeks from tomorrow?
You know, I think we're going to have discussions across the administration, across some of his trusted advisors about that. I think he's been pretty clear that what he stands for is what he outlined during the campaign, what he and the Democratic legislators have talked about supporting now, what's likely to be in his budget. And so that's going to continue to be his priority. We're going to be forced to respond to what the Republican in the legislature have done. But I guess I go back to, you know, in some ways, and it's not just about credit, but I give him credit for raising this idea and raising this as part of his campaign platform. And so, you know, the reaction from the legislature to make sure that we're talking about a middle-class tax cut is in some ways a victory for this governor and a great way for him to start his new administration.
Is vetoing the Republican tax bill an option, Mr. Secretary?
Sure, it absolutely is an option.
It is?
Yes.
A veto with a message that I'm bringing in my own budget another tax cut.
Yeah. I mean, the discussion's been out there for the last several weeks about this.
Okay. Let's talk about what do you think was the message sent by the Republicans in both the lameback session and now insisting on acting quickly on their own tax cut? What's the message they're sending Governor Evers and your administration, sir?
I think the message that they're sending is it's a new day for everybody. You know, they, over the last 8 years, it's been one-party rule and one-party domination in the state of Wisconsin. Having the Democrats back in charge of the executive branch, I think, evens that playing field. It levels that playing field in lots of ways. And I think part of what this is to make sure that we in the executive branch understand that the legislature is still there. The legislature is an important part of the governmental process and the decision-making process. All of those things which we know, you know, the reminders that were sent in December, I think lots of people, both within the executive branch, some in the legislature, and across the state, think that those were overreaches and were not necessarily appropriate. But we're dealing with those things as they come up.
After the lame duck bills passed, let me say that correctly, Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald said, the governor of Wisconsin still has the strongest veto power in the nation. Is that true?
I think it's generally accepted that we're among the most powerful vetoes. There are other governors who have the ability to appoint cabinet, or not just cabinet secretaries, but appoint what are now constitutional officers in the state of Wisconsin. So it's not necessarily the most powerful job in the country, but it still has very wide veto powers exercised by Governor Walker 99 times in the last state budget. And that was with a Republican assembly and Senate. And so it's certainly something that is within the purview of this governor to use, and we expect that it will get used, probably more so in divided government than it would with one-party rule.
The reason I ask is it possible, because the Republican tax cut does make an appropriation, could you reshape that with vetoes, or do you see that as a straight up or down decision, sir?
I think that's all stuff for up for discussion. The Senate hasn't even acted yet on the bill. And so I think we have to see what's in the final version and then decide from there. But again, putting it in the context of the governor has set forth his principles about that whatever we do should be sustainable. It shouldn't just be a one-time effort that the resources for which you don't know are going to be there next year or in the next biennium. So I think those are the principles on which he's going to make that decision.
The other major issue, lame duck, Republican tax cut. You woke up one day to a report from Reuters that Foxconn was not going to build that major manufacturing plant in Racine. Then we went back and forth as a state. Will they or won't they? And then Foxconn announced, after talking to President Trump, and I don't know if they talked to the governor or not, we will. Do you believe that manufacturing facility will be built in Racine County?
I think that they have every intention of doing a major project here in the state of Wisconsin. I think across the board, everybody thinks that. And in some ways, you know, we have spent lots of time in the first month and a half of this administration getting to know the people at Foxconn and making sure we establish those relationships, making sure that we're responsive to the locals who are out ahead of Foxconn and out ahead of everybody else. So, you know, from Racine County, Mount Pleasant, the city of Racine, lots of them are putting in significant resources into this already and already have. And so this is an issue on which, and even predating the inauguration, there were at least conversations that were being had. And so this is something that's been at the front of the governor's agenda, and it's part of Wisconsin's agenda moving forward.
When the governor says that your administration is going to review the air pollution permit, the water diversion permit, does that statement threaten Foxconn?
No, it shouldn't. Those are steps in the process. And the state has not only a responsibility and obligation to do those kind of things and to make sure that we're doing them in a responsible way. The other thing that I think is really important is, you know, there are the actors have changed in a lot of the roles that are part of this.
Yes.
And what's almost as important as anything else is making sure that the people who are in the positions now are able to get all the information that was shared within the last 18 months as the Foxconn project went from an idea into a very significant investment by the state of Wisconsin. So a lot of what we're doing is making sure that the people in the administration, the various agencies that have work to do here, whether they be DOT, whether they be DNR, whether they be DSPIS, all of the different parties that are part of this, that we all have the information that our predecessors had and we haven't had the benefit of. So a lot of what we're doing right now is just making sure that everybody has access to that information, because that's an important thing. And I think without getting too critical of the prior administration, I think transparency, which is something that Governor Evers has talked about related to the Foxconn deal from the beginning and throughout the campaign, I don't think that that necessarily was a hallmark of everything that was done related to Foxconn throughout the last 18 months. And I think that that's something that this administration, whether it be on Foxconn or a host of other issues, we want to make sure that transparency is one of the things that people understand is a high priority for Governor Evers, and it's something that his administration is going to do from day one.
Just one more follow-up question on Foxconn. Since you woke up one day to this Reuters report that they were not going to build it, have you initiated any new day-to-day contacts with Foxconn, or are you letting Wiedek and Mr. Hogan do that? Are you doing anything different to stay in touch with Foxconn, given the potential future uncertainty?
You know, I guess I can tell you that from the beginning days of the administration, we've had not daily contact, but weekly contact with Foxconn, and that has been expanding. The resources that the governor and the government have at their disposal, we're making the appropriate investment in making sure that Foxconn, that we're responsive to them and that we have the resources aligned within the government. I wouldn't say we've changed anything in the way that we're dealing with this. I'd say we have made sure that it's getting the appropriate attention that it deserves, and it will continue to do so. I had conversations with Foxconn on Monday. I talked with local representatives of the local government yesterday. Mm-hmm. I have another conversation today. So this is part of really the rhythm of how we do things, and it ought to be, because when you're looking at, you know, $3 to $4 billion of public resources going into something, it deserves attention, and it deserves a fresh set of eyes to look at everything too, and that's really what we're doing.
Two lingering issues, I almost said controversies, with the legislature on the budget. Number one, transportation funding. The governor said yesterday there's maybe a consensus building with the 34-member task force for a gas tax mm-hmm. increase. Can you tell us whether you expect that to be likely in the governor's budget on February 28th?
I think you're going to have to tune in on February 28th. But I do think that across stakeholders, and this isn't necessarily a partisan issue, I think there are lots of stakeholders who understand that what we've been doing over the last several years is not sustainable or viable. In 2010, about 11% of the budget was paid off debt. You move forward to 2018, that's over 20%. That's like 22%. And I think people understand that, one, that's not viable, it's not sustainable, it's not fair to the next generations who are going to be the ones who are responsible for that debt. And so the actions that we take are going to be ones that bring that back into a more reasonable percentage and make sure that we can invest in the roads that we all heard about during the campaign, and, you know, from the locals to the counties and state highways, all of whom have said that there are significant problems there. So I think that there is consensus building on there. What the final outcome looks like, I think, is still to be determined.
Well, my follow-up question, a 5-cent increase in the gas tax will only bring in $165 million. When I interviewed Secretary Thompson, he said our shortfall in state highways alone, not including interstate bridges and locals, is between $360 and $400. So even if your administration, I understand you're not saying you will, recommends a 5-cent upper in the gas tax, you're still hundreds of millions short. So it's going to be a comprehensive package?
It has to be. And, you know, and Secretary Thompson is doing what Secretary Thompson should. He's advocating for as much of an investment in that as we can make. You know, but putting a budget together across all enterprises is about priorities. And certainly transportation funding is going to be a high priority. Healthcare funding is going to be a priority.
That's where I want to go next.
Okay, but I don't want to get away from this governor's highest priority, as you know, for where he comes from, is
K-12, transportation, healthcare. Let's talk about healthcare. What is a reasonable compromise when the governor is going to recommend on February 28th expansion of MA, and the Republican legislators are saying, "Read my lips, no way." Excuse me, I need water. Is there a reasonable compromise?
I think there's a reasonable compromise, and I think that there's room for discussion on that. I think we were all a little disappointed that right out of the gate it was kind of over our dead bodies. And I think that before we talk about what the potential compromises are, I think there's a conversation to be had with real people around the state. And that's what the governor has talked about doing, because, you know, through the Medicaid expansion, you're not only talking about coverage for people who either have poor coverage now or no coverage at all, but you're also talking about other investments you can make in other states. The resources that have been used through the Medicaid expansion have gone to things like opioid addiction and, you know, how do you improve rural access to health care and things like that. And I think those are important things to bring into the discussion before we start compromising away what are resources that we know are there and can be invested in those things.
In his State of the State speech, Governor Evers said, "I am asking legislative leaders to not put my budget in the garbage can and adopt their own, work off the current base." Mm-hmm. What options does the Evers administration have if they do indeed do that, sir?
Well, one we've been told by numerous parties that they're not going to just take it and throw it in the garbage. And so I think that's a step forward. I think we're confident that they're going to work off of that, and we're going to have discussions based on that. So I think that's a step forward even from the beginning. And then it's all part of the process. They have every right to take what we have, what the governor will submit, and then take their actions on it. There'll be discussions, statewide about that. There'll be discussions in joint finance. And so that part of the process, I think, will kind of ensue in the way that it is expected to. And then there'll be a whole bunch of negotiation throughout the coming months to make sure we get to the end game.
Is the nuclear option, vetoing the entire budget passed by the legislature, possible?
It's been suggested. It's been by, and mainly by, people outside of the government as opposed to people inside. I think it's far premature to talk about what your options are before you let the process ensue. And I think one of the things I would say is that the governor, I think, has had constructive dialogue with leadership in the legislature. And I think, and as cabinet secretaries, we're making our way around, especially around the Senate, because we all have to be confirmed by the Senate. And I think even there's a spirit of cooperation. There's a spirit of, okay, let's kind of see how the process lays out before we stand on one side or another and just kind of start lobbing hand grenades at each other. So I think we're optimistic that there's opportunity there to find consensus, if not on the whole thing, certainly on specific issues within the budget.
Speaker Voss has taken the lead on the lame duck session and the tax cut differences between you and the administration. Does he sound to you like he's a potential candidate for governor in four years?
I don't know. I think you'd have to ask him. But I do think that one of the things that's not necessarily helpful for people in the legislature who are thinking about running for governor is the specter of Scott Walker that's still hanging around out here. And former Governor Walker has been talking already openly about whether he'll run for governor again or run for the Senate.
He hasn't ruled it out, he said.
And yeah, I think anybody in the legislature now who thinks about, what may happen in the future, the fact that you have the person who was the 800-pound gorilla still kind of stalking around over here, it makes it more challenging for anybody in the legislature. And I also think because he's now gone and because they're here, the opportunity for all of us is to get something accomplished. And I think there are, unfortunately, pretty low expectations from people across the state. The lame duck session, didn't do anything to inspire confidence in people that we're going to get a lot done here, because they thought that was, putting more obstacles in the way of getting things done. And you have a governor that has said very openly from day one and said across his administration to all of us that we're about getting things done more than we are about having, just pitched partisan battles. And so I think the expectations are low, unfortunately. They should be raised. But I think if we can get some things accomplished, I hope that people in the legislature see that there's maybe a pathway for them to do something else when this budget is done and when we're done, because that will mean we have accomplished something. I don't think anybody benefits from us not being able to do anything and not being able to move the state forward in the directions that we have clearly articulated that we all want to do.
You're very close to Milwaukee Mayor Barrett. You worked in his administration. You helped get elected.
I did.
Mayor?
I did.
I didn't say that correctly. The first major cabinet appointments, everybody was from Milwaukee. There's a fear among some Republican legislators outstate that Milwaukee is going to do potentially too well and too many resources in the next 2019-2021 budget will unfairly favor Milwaukee. Your response?
Well, one, I've had conversations with numerous legislators over the course of the last several weeks leading up to confirmation. Not one has said they're fearful of Milwaukee getting too much because I'm in my position. Okay. As much as anything, I'm trying to make sure we can establish relationships that are meaningful regardless of where somebody's from. Because in the end, you don't say I'm from Wisconsin before I'm from Milwaukee. And the other thing I guess that I would say is I think there's a large segment of people who would say that Milwaukee has been in Milwaukee County and other urban areas have been unduly penalized over the last several years. And so, making sure that there are some resources that go to the places that have the largest poverty challenge, economic development challenges, workforce development challenges, I don't think that's unfair. I think that's just maybe evening the playing field and making sure that we address things in that way. But I haven't heard anybody who fears that that's the case. And yeah, there are people who are appointed who are from Milwaukee. There are people from Madison. There are people from outstate. And I think the governor has done a great job of providing himself with a diverse group of people and a diverse set of opinions that hopefully reflect what's great about Wisconsin. And we're going to the actions that we take will also be reflective of that.
Revenue controls, spending controls have been limiting the ability of local governments to provide services. But as Governor Walker said, that has had the effect of holding down mm-hmm. property taxes. Mm-hmm. My question is, do you believe local governments need more resources to raise revenues on their own apart from the interplay with state government?
I think they clearly want and they've asked us for more flexibility. And I think throughout the campaign, the governor has talked about doing that. If you're talking about other local option opportunities to raise revenue, I believe that that's, and I know something about this because I've been involved in some of the conversations at Milwaukee County.
Yes.
In some ways, that's a ground-up discussion. That's not necessarily something that should come from the state top-down. I think it's the local units of government making sure that they're talking about this in a cohesive way and then arming themselves to come to the state and look for that. So I think that, and I would observe to you that I think over the last several years, I think the local communities have gotten better and stronger about articulating that message. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to hear about that. The legislature is going to hear about it. The governor and the administration certainly are already hearing about it. But there are places like the city of Milwaukee is so overly reliant on the property tax that, and they have such little opportunity to raise any other revenue. I think they've got a credible argument to make when they're 97% of their budget versus 5% in Columbus, Ohio is based on property taxes or something like that. So they have a credible argument to make, I think.
Have you just said that the governor's budget may give local governments more flexibility?
No. Oh, have I said
more flexibility to raise revenue on their own without...
I have not said that. I think he said what he has said throughout the campaign. He said local governments should have more flexibility if it's like the revenue caps and things like that. Those are things that may end up in the budget. The idea of the local option sales taxes and things like that, I think those are probably the discussions that would be separate legislation, more likely that that's going to be the case moving
forward. Separate legislation, not part of the budget. But is it time for that dialogue? And where I'm coming from is state government for 8 years has adopted to local governments, thou shalt not. And do we need to reverse that? And if you give the authority, local governments, to raise revenue with the consent of your constituents.
Yeah, I think that it's time to have that discussion. Part of our job, government at all levels is a partnership. It's a contract. There's the idea of shared revenue and all those things that are part of that contract. And for us not to listen and not to be responsive when all kinds of local units of government are talking about the cost of services going up and they're hamstrung on these things, I think it would be it's in the state's best interest. It's in the best interest of the people who live in those communities mm-hmm. for us to have that conversation. What the outcome of that is, that's to be determined. But to just kind of put your to put your foot down and say we're not even going to have that conversation seems to me a little irresponsible, and we need to be responsive to them.
You don't have a problem then with local governments that have adopted a wheel tax?
They have the ability to do it, and that has happened. And frankly, there's been an explosion of that in the last several years. There's been an explosion of wheel taxes. There was in the last election the highest referendum, almost $2 billion of referendum that were passed.
$1.97 billion last year.
So all of those things, I think, point to that those things might be replacing what had previously been state investment in those things. And so I think the conversation needs to be had about what is the appropriate level and not just about shutting the door, because these things, the revenue that's being raised is coming out of people's pockets, and they're now looking at their locals and wondering why this is happening. And so in some ways, they're pointing to the state and pointing a finger here, and in some ways, that's justified.
Okay, two final questions, because we're almost out of time.
Sure.
And I really appreciate your candor here. Your budget recommendation for K-12, I looked it up. It's going to recommend $8 billion in the fiscal year 2020-21. Okay. When you look at the new LFB revenue estimates, 17.3 or 17.6 billion. Here's my question. If you get your way and $8 billion is K-12 in 2020-21 fiscal year, 45% of state GPR tax collections will go to K-12. Is that going to squeeze out all the other needs? Medicaid, aid to local governments, prison, and the UW system. Is that a squeeze?
Well, you know, I think in some ways, budgets are about priorities. And clearly, this governor, having been the head, the superintendent of, and the head of DPI, the issue that he cares passionately about, and I think part of the reason why he was elected governor, was about education. And you have seen, we all have seen public polling on things in recent months where people are willing to spend more on mm-hmm. public education. They're willing to invest it. And I think it's not just in the K-12 system, but also the university system. I mean, what drives innovation in Wisconsin is education. And there have been very clearly over the last several years, there was a period of disinvestment in that from top to bottom. And I think what you're going to see is from this governor and from his administration is a reinvestment in that, a focus on where are there opportunities to invest there and get the outcomes that we want in workforce development and in economic development. So clearly that's going to be a priority. The rest of those priorities, you know, we're going to make sure that all of that fits together. The governor has talked a lot since he was elected and even before about connecting the dots within right. agencies. And so, you know, what happens at DPI should have a direct impact on what happens at the Department of Workforce Development. It should have an impact on what happens at the Department of Corrections. You know, it's an embarrassment that we crossed the threshold within the last biennium or within the last few years where we spend more on corrections than we do for the UW system. That's not the kind of investment I think that we as Wisconsinites want to be making, and we're trying to kind of turn that ship of state around in the investments that we're
making. You mentioned corrections. Could the governor's budget call for the closing of a prison?
I think that it's unlikely that that's going to be the scenario because what we're doing, there are investments that need to be made right now, almost emergency investments, because we have more people in our prisons than can be humanely housed in where they are now. And so we need to make some short-term decisions that allow people to live in more humane conditions, that make it better for the guards who are there and the people who work in those places, as we create a longer-term strategy that yeah. that has fewer people going to prison and more people, you know, avoiding that to be able to have more productive lives and be taxpayers in the state. So I think that's something that's shared across people regardless of their ideology, too.
Okay. And this is my last question, I promise. Governor Evers has appointed a very high number of African Americans to key positions and women. Why is diversity so important to the governor of Wisconsin?
Look, you can take out governor in there. It's important to Wisconsin because unless you're reflective of all the richness that this state has to offer, you can't govern the way you need to. You can't create the kind of opportunity and create the kind of future that you want there. I have two children, and they go to a real diverse school, a Milwaukee public school that they can walk back and forth to. And I think that's part of the richness of not only in Milwaukee, but across the state. And that's where our greatness comes from, is when you do that. And so I am thrilled to be part of a cabinet that looks like Wisconsin, that acts like Wisconsin, and represents leadership from across the state. And I'm proud to work for a governor who puts that front and center as one of his priorities. He also, you know, in his first executive order, talked about respecting people from across all disciplines, respecting state employees, yes. respecting people's beliefs and what they do. And I think that should be a hallmark of his administration moving forward. It certainly has been from day one of the things that he has articulated that we need to be doing.
Joel Brennan, Secretary of the Department of Administration, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks a lot,
really
Steve.
Appreciate it. Thank
Thanks.
You.